We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're going to talk a lot of Phillies on today's podcast with actress and podcaster Ellen Adair. Joining us next on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Jeff Erickson, and I am so happy to have our guest today, Ellen Adair. You can follow her on Twitter, of course, at her Twitter account at Ellen_Adair. And of course, see her in the movie Herd. It's now moving to Shudder. And also Take Me Into the Ballgame, a new podcast on Pitcherless. Ellen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you so much for promoting all the things.
Yeah, of
Thanks,
course.
Friend.
Of course. Absolutely. Anytime. Well, hey, you're the most famous Philly fan I know. So, and you
only because you don't know Miles Teller personally.
I do not. That is true. I do not know Miles Teller. My fingers. But anyways, Eric Holtzman is the other famous Phillies fan, at least that I know from RotoWire. So it's
very
it's
famous.
There,
but
love Eric. Yes, he is awesome. And but let's talk Phillies. They're playing our Reds right now. 5-0 Phillies. We're in the sixth inning. It's a Zach Wheeler day, so it's a good day for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, certainly the Phillies were not able to get Zach Wheeler his first few wins, and then he gave up a grand slam to Jack Sawinski of the Pirates, of all things. It shouldn't have been a grand slam. There should have only been maybe one guy on base just because of a couple of errors. But nevertheless, Zach Wheeler in his last few starts, obviously no-hit the White Sox last time out. Not the entire game, but into the seventh inning, no-hit stuff, and looks pretty good against the Reds again today. So yeah. Hopefully the Phillies bullpen will be as Fangraphs projected them to be at the beginning of the season,
right,
and be a good bullpen and not blow the lead for him, as has still happened on numerous occasions.
Exactly.
Every time it happens, though, I'm like, Fangraphs. Anyway.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Shake that fist, angry fist at the world. I
hear
you.
I do love Fangraphs. I'm just joking.
Yeah, come on, Spore, we're coming at you, dude. Let's talk a little about that Phillies bullpen, because again, Rob Thompson doesn't really have one set closer. They have a deep bullpen, all these live arms, whether it's Jose Alvaro or Jeff Hoffman or any other good reliever out there. They're expected to be an elite bullpen.
They are. Yeah. And I mean, I think that that's but partially graded upon the stuff that was in the bullpen. And I do say that the Phillies bullpen statistics that we've seen so far, although I was on Rob Bradford's Baseball Isn't Boring podcast earlier this week,
yep,
and did on that podcast share a bevy of stats that show that the Phillies pitching staff overall is like either best in Major League Baseball or best in the National League in a bevy of different stats. I won't do that full rundown today because I haven't gotten my stats updated for today's games. But if anybody wants to go back and listen to that, I do talk about that. And that obviously includes the bullpen, which includes some blow up starts by, or not starts, but appearances by Connor Brogdon and Ricardo Pinto. Connor Brogdon since DFA'd, and I don't know how long Ricardo Pinto, though he's a great story, is going to remain with the Phillies. So hopefully with Orion Kirkering back, the bullpen as a whole starts to look a little bit more solid.
My guy, Ryan Roof, who runs our bullpen, our closer grid, loves Kirkering. Loves him. Absolutely loves him. So looking
he's
forward to
such an exciting. Yeah, he's such an exciting pitcher to watch. Absolutely. So I don't know that he necessarily sees saves, but as you mentioned, obviously it's an unsettled situation there with Alvarado and Hoffman, I think, getting the bulk of the saves so far. But, you know, it could be anybody's job in theory, should Kirkering really step up and become lights out this year.
Yeah. And under Thompson, I think that's by design. I think that he doesn't like having one set closer. It's more that he wants to have one pitcher for, you know, a given moment, and whoever is best for that moment, whether it's Strom or Alvarado or Kirkering or Hoffman, you know, he'll go with them.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think if somebody were to emerge, I don't think that Thompson is ideologically opposed to the idea of one guy getting most of the saves. I think simply nobody has emerged as being obviously so much better than anybody else. And I do think generally his approach is going to be, who are the batters that are coming up? Who's going to be the pitcher who is going to be best suited for those batters, as opposed to thinking about it on a sort of per inning basis.
Indeed. Let's talk about one of the reasons why that Phillies pitching staff is rated so high, and that's Ranger Suarez. Pitched another gem on Monday, smoked the Rockies before that. I think he's got 4 wins already this season. According to RotoWire's player value rater, or earned auction value, he's the most valuable pitcher so far this year.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. I mean, obviously he had a complete game shutout versus the Rockies on, you know, at home in Citizens Bank Park. So Rockies on the road. And nevertheless, like, a complete game shutout is never, it's not something to be sneezed at ever. And his other 2 starts were, I believe, against the Pirates and the Nationals. So I kind of feel like this start against the Reds on Monday was perhaps the best test of Ranger Suarez so far. And it was great to see that he was still excellent. And I do think that Suarez has always been a little bit better of a real life player than fantasy pitcher. And partly I think that's because of his unflappable demeanor. I always call him cool as a tiny little helmet of ice cream, but it's also because of his elite ground ball percentage. And this year is not an exception with 61.3%. So that obviously makes more of a difference to a real life team rather than a fantasy team. But his fastball, which is, I mean, really his main fastball that he throws is his sinker. He rarely throws his 4-seam. It's like 91, 92. And he was sometimes an even sort of average or below average strikeout pitcher. So I feel like those are also reasons why, legitimately, I think fantasy players have kind of been like, like, Ranger Suarez, am I getting really excited about this? Except for, of course, that one stretch in, I think it was late 2021, when he just looked incredible. Right. And it was partly the level of competition that he was facing there. But I do think that since then, Caleb Cotham has changed Ranger Suarez with the addition of the cutter, and particularly the curveball. And the thing that I want to shout out here is the curveball, because I think it's been a key to his success so far this season. So in his last 3 starts, he's been using it more than he averaged using it last year, and it has been phenomenal. It was a 41.6% CSW in the shutout versus the Rockies. And I remember thinking, like, well, is it just that the Rockies are particularly bad with breaking balls? But then, bam, 55% CSW versus the Reds. So, look, yes, the sinker is not sexy, but it regularly has like 65% ground ball rate. And now he's got the curve and he's got the changeup, which is still a good pitch. It's got 33% CSW this year overall. And that's from when he used to just be a sort of sinker changeup guy. The changeup is still there. And now he's also got the cutter. So no, he's not a fantasy ace, but I think for sure, you know, if anybody is thinking about somehow, you know, Ranger Suarez is available, should I pick up Ranger Suarez? Yeah, pick him up and see where it goes.
Absolutely. And contrary to common trends right now, his velocity is actually down a little bit, which is kind of funny. Usually you see the success tracking with increased velocity, but he's done the opposite. But then again, maybe that keeps him on the mound as opposed to all these other pitchers that seem to be falling by the wayside right now.
Sure. And I think it's particularly because his game has never relied on his velocity being particularly good. Obviously, look, if you're throwing a 92 mile an hour fastball, you don't want to be throwing a 90 mile an hour fastball. You don't want that. But I think because it's been very much about that two seam generating ground balls, and now that he has a number of different breaking pitches that he's getting great outcomes on, he's just kind of playing that game a little bit more.
Indeed. So, and it's certainly working out well for him right now. Another pitcher that's working out well right now is Spencer Turnbull, but you know, he looks like he might be going to the bullpen in favor of Taijuan Walker coming off the IL. What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, I mean, it's very complicated. And it is, I think, confirmed that Taijuan Walker is going to be back in the rotation. Rob Thompson said that he would start this Sunday in San Diego, and he's going to sort of be slotted in between Suarez and Sanchez to split up the lefties. But Taijuan Walker did not look good in his last start at AAA. It was 6 1/3 innings, but he allowed 7 hits, 4 runs all earned, 3 walks, and he had 1 strikeout. Yes. How do you spell Taijuan Walker with just 1 K? So most alarmingly, as we were just discussing fastball velocity, his fastball was at about 90 when it typically averages 93, sometimes hitting 95, 96. So it only hit 90. It wasn't even averaging 90. It was brutal. And I've heard some speculation in Phillies land that maybe he was just like, this is dumb. Why am I throwing another rehab start? I'm ready to go. So he wasn't really giving it his all. I don't know that I believe that.
Yeah. That's too convenient to me.
It sounds a little too convenient. On the other hand, here he comes. He's going to be in the rotation. And I think Spencer Turnbull is going to the bullpen. However, to talk a little bit about how interesting Spencer Turnbull has been before we get into the sad news that we're not going to see him starting in the near future, probably. There was a great conversation with our friends Nick Pollock and Eno Saris on The Craft a couple of weeks ago. Now that I also have a Pitcher List podcast, I just need to promote those other podcasts on the Pitcher List baseball feed, right? So it is the Use It or Lose It episode where they talk about Turnbull's four-seamer and how it's really functionally, this was my understanding of these two geniuses, like I am a mere goofball, right? But how it's really functionally like a cutter in terms of its movement, and how he's been tricking batters by making them guess about which fastball it's going to be. And one of the things that Nick pointed out was he was like, so many of the strikeouts that he got were because he was using his four seam as sort of like a backdoor fake cutter to lefties. And people are going to catch up to this. It was sort of backdoor in the same way that Aaron Nola uses his two-seam as a backdoor out pitch for righties. Right. Anyway, what I have been heartened having heard that conversation, and I was like, oh no, he's just a one-trick pony and batters are going to catch up to him. No, again, I'm a mere goofball, but in his subsequent starts, Turnbull has gotten a lot of strikeouts on his new sweeper, which has been great. It has a 35.4% CSW and his curveball. So he is not a one-trick pony. He's got at least 3 tricks, which is, I feel like, you know, about as many tricks as you maybe need. But the issue, unfortunately, is just really innings limits. And I think that this is legit. So for those who might have forgotten, Turnbull is coming back from Tommy John surgery, and he only pitched like 30 innings last year. And it's been since 2019 that he actually pitched somewhere in the realm of 150. So I don't know if that's a de facto, 60 innings for Turnbull this season, but they have to take care of him and they can't just leave him in the rotation. And I think that someone else is going to go out over the course of the season and they will need him to start again. So I just feel confident that we're probably going to see Turnbull start again. And that will be complicated, of course, because it's hard to go back and forth from the starting rotation to the bullpen. And you'd like to just see him continue the success because he's been so good as a starting pitcher. But unfortunately, it's not practical or realistic that the Phillies were going to get him to start for the full season.
Yeah, I hear that. And, you know, to that point, he only pitched 5 innings last night. He had 8 Ks. You know, that's 7 more than Taijuan Walker at AAA. But I'm not going to keep harping on that point, but I will. But
no, you should. Like, yeah. We all should.
Yeah. They might piggyback him, too. He might be the guy that comes in after Walker pitches 3 or 4 innings. Still could sneak in some wins. I wouldn't drop Turnbull so quickly, like, fantasy-wise. Because I think they still could carve out a fairly valuable role. He's just a good pitcher. And sometimes they find that there's ways those things kind of work out.
Yeah, I think it's sort of, you know, obviously caveat, like it depends upon the depth of a person's league,
right?
And what else might be available out there. And I think, yeah, if you've got the ability to sort of hold him on the bench and see what ends up happening, you know, I don't know, maybe see what ends up happening with Taijuan Walker's start,
yeah.
Then I would certainly do that.
Okay, very good. We're going to talk about 2 Phillies we might be worried about, but first, we're going to have a quick note from one of our friends over at Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country. Prize Picks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. You can just pick more or less on 2 or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. You can talk about Aaron Nola's start tomorrow in San Diego, and will he get more enough Ks to cover his projection or not? You can check out our pick tool at RotoWire. We do it for Prize Picks. You can do all sorts. We kind of optimize using our projections, other projections in the universe and all that, and the betting odds. And we try to give you some ideas on how you can do well on Prize Picks. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Download the app today and use code ROTOPOD for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code ROTOPOD, ROTOPOD, for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Aaron Nola has not been getting the strikeout so far lately. He has a good ERA, 3.16 and a 1.09 whip. Why am I talking about worries? But yet I look at him, Ellen, and I'm a little concerned. The swing and miss is down. The Ks are a little bit down. Maybe he's just a warm weather pitcher and I'm worrying way too much. What's your take on Aaron Nola?
My take is that, yeah, he's a warm weather pitcher. And so obviously those first couple of starts were hard because it was very cold. And yeah. In the start versus the Cardinals, it was really raining really hard. And his velocity was way down in that start. But so was, I think it was Lance Lynn on the other side. The opposing pitcher was also struggling with velocity. It was just hard for him to get his landing foot down on the mound. It was pretty clear. So I think in the last couple of starts, which have been great, obviously, even though they have been versus the Rockies and the White Sox, there's that caveat. But also, the weather has been much better, and mm-hmm. It's nice to see that his fastball velocity has rebounded after being down in that rainy start versus the Cardinals. So I just feel like in the last couple of starts, we've seen his breaking pitches work in the way that I know that they can, that we know okay. They can. So I'm not concerned. I also feel like a sort of exciting thing to mention about Aaron Nola, and I have to fully credit our friend Nick Pollock for thinking that this is exciting, but it is that he's been elevating both of his fastballs more. And that's exciting because Nola's four-seam has a high height adjusted vertical approach angle of 1.4, that is 90th percentile, suggesting that the ball is flat and that it should have better results locating it up. And he has been doing that. He has been also locating the two seam up a little bit more, which is interesting. I don't know if it's just a little bit about playing those two pitches off of each other so that batters aren't necessarily expecting that just because it's a fastball high in the zone, it's going to be the four seamer and not the two seamer. Anyway, I think that that's interesting. And I feel like throughout his career, something that I certainly know as at least the number 2 Aaron Nola fan possibly in the world, is that he's always done much better in warmer weather than colder weather. And so I am not concerned about Aaron Nola amongst the Phillies that I am concerned about.
Yeah. So suffice to say, unlike the horse in Seinfeld, he is not a mutter. His mutter was not a mutter, but he's more like Luis Castillo. He likes that warm weather. So there we go as far as that goes. The other guy I want to bring up, cover boy to this, and we always do this on Thursdays. We've been doing this panic meter thing, so pardon the hyperbole, but Nick Castellanos is off to a rough start. Only one extra base hit so far. Now, this is kind of a rough look for him. They did bat him cleanup, I think, yesterday against a lefty, but that was merely because there was a lefty on the mound. How does he dig out of this hole?
I have no idea, honestly. It's been bad. It's been really bad. I mean, no matter what, whether you're like looking on Baseball Savant or Pitcher List or whatever, like his player page is just like icicles. He has an O swing of 43%. That is the bottom 4th percentile in baseball. Yeah, it's really bad. And part of it is when he struggled in 2022, he couldn't hit breaking pitches. And I remember doing a little bit of a deep dive and being like, oh, I see. He's just not able to barrel breaking pitches in the way that he has been previously in his career for whatever reason. And so the reason that he cannot lay off that sort of low and away slider is because he thinks he can hit that because he's hit it in the past, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is the kind of problem that we see all the time with baseball players is they're like, oh, but I've always been good against that pitch, but suddenly they're not right now for that reason, but they keep swinging at it because they're like, no, like I know I can get it. So that was his problem in 2022, but really now it's sort of everything is his problem. Like he's actually doing slightly better against breaking pitches than he is against fastballs. So I don't know what to prognosticate. He had a nice 3-for-3 game with a walk against the White Sox. And I think all of us Phillies fans hoped that that would be a sign that he was turning it around and he'd be feeling good about himself. And I also was hopeful, you know, maybe he goes back to Cincinnati and is like, oh yeah, I remember what it was like to be a hitter here. Yeah. So many players talk about how great it is to see the ball there. Maybe that would be good for Nick Castellanos, but that's not working either. And so I know that he recently made a statement and I don't have it directly in front of me, but he was basically saying like, look, last year, also in July, I struggled for a little while and then it got better and people said, what happened? And I said, I don't know. It was just baseball. So that's sort of his takeaway about what's happening right now. And I kind of partly buy that because I know that baseball can be like that. But also I sort of feel like he's actually only had about 3 good months in Philly. And yeah. So some of me wonders, is that the part that's just baseball and not this? Look, I like Castellanos a lot as a human being and as a baseball player. Look, I have a Reds Nick Castellanos shirt. I'm a Nick Castellanos fan. But he had reasons that he gave for 2022 being bad, that like he was worried about time spent away from his kids and adjusting to a new place. And when he got off to the hot start last year, I think we were all willing to be like, yeah, that's totally what happened. But now it kind of feels like his excellent performance at the beginning of last year seems like more of an outlier than this. I mean, obviously not quite this terrible. I do not expect Nick Castellanos to be this bad for the rest of the year, but I do feel like my personal takeaway is right now, Marsh should be starting every single day and not Castellanos.
Oh, I agree with that. I haven't quite put him into the Jose Abreu zone of where I'm just willing to move on. But like if Willier Abreu is available hitting the middle of that Red Sox order, I think I'd take him over Castellanos right now and just move on.
Yeah. I mean, particularly if you've got enough space to bench Castellanos, I don't feel like you can play him right now. Yeah. And if somebody dropped him, I would understand. I do believe that he turns it around, but I don't think that he has any game plan for how that's going to happen.
Right.
And I think that that is troubling.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes you get some hitters that are really analytical, like Joey Votto, and can articulate that too. Castellanos is not that, and it's not to a fault. Nobody's Joey Votto. But you'd like to hear a little bit of something more promising too at the same token.
Yeah, Yep, I agree. I mean, you know, another example of a player who also isn't super analytical and just when he's in a slump, he's like, I'm just going to work my way out of it, is Bryce Harper, right? Yeah. So you can't blame that mindset necessarily. True. And I do feel very much that for every baseball player, they have to find the thing that works for them. But at a certain point, it's like, is this the thing that's working for you, Nick Castellanos? That's the question.
That's a good question, indeed. Yeah. We're going to talk about a couple more Phillies. But first, got to share a quick note from our friends at Vivid Seats. Finally, baseball is back. This MLB season, knock it out of the park with Vivid Seats and score great tickets to the biggest games of the year. Every fastball, every home run, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team, live and in person. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, you earn rewards with every single purchase. Just buy 10 tickets, then cash in your credit toward your free 11th ticket. Talk about an easy win. And here's a pro reward tip. When buying tickets for your whole group, split the bill and make progress towards your free 11th ticket even faster. From behind the dugout to the upper deck, Vivid Seats has great tickets for all the 2024 games that matter to you. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. See vividseats.com/rewards for terms and conditions. Also, quick note, we are on the Blue Wire Network. Here are their quick ads.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right. Thank you for your patience there, folks. And you, Ellen, as well. Thank you for listening to our ads. Let's talk
they
about...
They were delightful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I live for live reads. It's my favorite thing. Alec Bohm is an I would be very... I do live for it. I think he's fantastic. He's on a roll right now, batting cleanup. Boy, is that the storyline turned on him in the last year and a half.
Yeah, absolutely. He has been incredible. He has an OPS of 988. That is good for an OPS plus of 177. His batting average, 337, is 13th best in the majors right now. Mm-hmm. But what's particularly impressive as a Phillies fan this early on is just seeing the at-bats that he's putting together. He's just making smart decisions. One thing that really jumps out to me about Alec Bohm this season is that he is walking 14% of the time, which is double what he was doing last year. And if anything gets in the zone, he is slamming it. Again, it's Alec Bohm, so it's more good contact than power, although he does have three homers, which is actually a pretty good pace for Alec Bohm. And some of this is he's genuinely become a much better fielder. And why should this matter to fantasy? I think it's because we know that Alec Bohm very famously is very hard on himself when he makes errors in the field and when he makes mistakes. So I kind of think that feeling more confident in the field has made him perhaps feel like a more confident player overall. But I have a couple of fun pitcher list stats. Okay. Pitcher list has these this great stat, ideal contact rate, which puts together barrels and solid contact over batted ball events and ideal plate appearances, which basically does the same over plate appearances. And Bohm ranks 82nd and 88th percentile, that is towards the top of baseball in both of them. So that just shows the way in which when something is in the zone, he's really figuring out exactly what to do with it. And when something isn't, he's laying off of it.
All right. Very good. I like that. That's cool. That's really good. He's been a big part because other players aren't starting well, but you know, the pitching staff's been so good. They, you know, Bryson Stott's had a great year last year. He's off to a slow start. JT Realmuto's off to a little bit of a slow start at the plate and maybe a little bit behind the plate too. I heard a stat today on the Reds broadcast that among qualified catchers, he's dead last in framing. And I never would have thought that with Realmuto, but I guess I had some kind of response on Twitter that he actually was kind of below average last year in that respect too.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a decline in terms of his framing metrics specifically. And I think something that's been troubling this year that you don't even need to sort of dig into the numbers to see is that he's overthrown a couple of stolen base attempts after this being so much a part of like what has made him such an excellent catcher and good at controlling the running game, particularly with a few pitchers who are sort of slow to the plate on the starting staff. So that has been very concerning to see. I mean, it might even be more than two. I have seen two personally, and I have not watched every single Phillies game, though I have watched many of them.
Right.
So I think that that is causing a little bit of panic amongst Phillies fans, particularly when combined with the slow offensive start. And we've seen this before. And I feel like what happened then was sort of, is maybe Realmuto just becoming an old catcher now, right? But then he rebounded and we're like, oh no, it was just a slump. And I think seeing other ways in which his athleticism and his defensive abilities are also on a little bit of a decline just make me a little bit concerned. I mean, he is 33 years old. I will love him until the day that I die, to be very clear. I love JT Realmuto, but I'm a little bit worried to see multiple different aspects of his game on the decline. And as we've seen before, maybe he can bounce back, but also you never know.
Yeah, indeed. By the way, 33 is not very old, but you know,
for a catcher, it's a little bit older, right?
I know.
It's not old for a person at all. Right. And it's not even that old for a baseball player, but like it's for a catcher.
Decline phase, different. For sure. Unfortunately, it's frustrating. I just kind of knee jerk react to that because I'm in my 50s. So, it's so funny. Realizing that aspect about yourself is always fun. Up and coming players, who should we keep an eye on there that might make an impact? You mentioned Kirkering, for instance, as someone that might be someone that's going to contribute. Anybody else we should keep an eye out for the future?
Well, most of the Phillies' really interesting minor leaguers are a ways away. Aiden Miller, third base shortstop, and Justin Crawford, of course, outfield. But we're not expecting to see them for a few years. Mm-hmm. I do think that coming into the season, there was a thought that we could see Mick Abel. Also, there's Andrew Painter, but he's still out with Tommy John, so we're not expecting to see him. But he has been not great. That is, Mick Abel has been not great so far at AAA, 6.94 ERA. So that does not seem imminent. although the season is young, so anything could happen with his performance at AAA. So he's somebody that I think, should he perform well, the Phillies, should they have the need, might slot him into the rotation. But again, I think that's going to be contingent upon both the need and also his performance. I do want to shout out, not necessarily a future player, but my boy, my favorite, Johan Rojas, who did get off to a very slow start, and everybody was panicked. Of course, last year, he came straight to the majors from AA. Nobody thought he was going to stick at the major league level, and he did. And partly that's because he is such a defensive wizard, and that is why I love him so much. And he plays all out, and it is beautiful to see. But he's also been picking it up at the plate. Since April 8th, he's been batting .381 with 6 stolen bases, and he's even been walking. He already has 5 walks on the season, which is as many as he had in 59 games last year. Right. So, no, there is not going to be a lot of power there. I believe, you know, of his home runs last year, I think at least one of them was off of a position player, that kind of a situation. But I do feel like as an overall hitter, he's really making the adjustments. I have seen him a number of times sit on the first pitch to get to then that same pitch later on in the same at bat, and with different kinds of pitches, both fastballs and breaking pitches. So I think it was last night he watched a first pitch slider from Lucas Sims and then got to a slider way later in the at-bat that was way out of the zone for an RBI single. So just seeing him make that kind of adjustment is really exciting. And also his speed is just going to get him more hits. I've seen this a lot where he, you know, it's kind of a bloop to the outfield, but he's going to leg it out. His BABIP is .321, which actually isn't as high as I thought it might be just from having watched him play. But it's going to be naturally elevated because of his elite sprint speed. So if you're out there and Johan Rojas is available and you particularly need steals that are not going to kill you in batting average, he might be that player for you.
Indeed. And that defense is going to keep on giving him more opportunities. Made a heck of a catch against my Reds earlier this week. Banged against the wall. I was worried he was hurt, but he remained in there.
I was so worried. Yeah. I was so worried. And it was so sweet the way Trey Turner came up and like kneeled next to him so he could lean against him. Oh, these players, they just love each other so much. And it's so sweet to say.
Indeed. Indeed.
Not fantasy relevant at all. Just like a Phillies fandom here for 1 second.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. You do a podcast. And you're now on pitcher list. Take me into the ball game. What can people expect when they check out your show?
So our show is grading baseball movies on the 20 to 80 scouting scale used for baseball prospects. So we have different tools for movies and we evaluate them and give them grades based on those various different tools like amount of baseball accuracy, storytelling, stuff like that. We do always very much get into the baseball of it all. If there's any sort of like baseball history that is relevant to the film, or if there's like this thing happened in this film, where are real life examples where that has happened? So it is not remotely fantasy relevant, but we do make sure that there's always a lot of baseball nuggets in there. And not just obviously, we are actors as the co-hosts of the podcast. And it looks like I'm going to be bringing on sort of new folks in the podcast in the future. Nice. So it might be a mixture of people who are actors and also baseball fans and also people who are just baseball fans. But we get into the baseball of it all very much.
Do you have a favorite all-time baseball movie?
I think my favorite all-time baseball movie is A League of Their Own, if I am forced to pick one.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's mild. Perfect. It's a nudge, not a force, but yeah. You know, do you like the new ad, that takes on, at League of Their Own? I guess it's a Jennifer Garner ad, I think, or whatever, but there's a little thing where she reprises the no crying in baseball scene.
Yeah. I've seen it. I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
I was like, why wasn't I in that ad?
That too. Well, and that's the thing is I don't talk to actors very often, like ever. So tell me more about like how your career has, you know, kind of been able to intertwine with baseball. How do you find time to be a big time baseball fan like this?
I have to tell you, it's hard, actually. It's hard. It's difficult. I used to follow baseball, I feel like, in more depth and in perhaps in more breadth and more depth than I do recently. And that's partly just because of some of the changes in the industry in the pandemic. Instead of, it used to be that actors would go in person and audition for things. And now we do everything by self-tapes. And self-tapes are far more time-consuming for the actor. However, they're much faster for the people on the other end because they don't have to sort of worry about filtering people in and out. So they see a lot more people. So what this also means is that you get many more auditions. However, they're seeing more people for all of those auditions. So don't worry, it takes more work and there's more of it, but you are less likely to get a job. Right. So that's basically a major way that, not to make this like complaining corner here for a second, but that's a major way that being an actor has changed in the last 4 years. And because it is cheaper for the people with the money and the power, they're not going to change this. And also, I think it is easier for casting directors. Those are not necessarily the people making this decision. I think a lot of casting directors would also prefer that we go back to in-person auditioning, but they're not the ones bankrolling the space. So it's whatever producer of the film or the television show is the one deciding whether or not they want to bring people in person. And they're like, oh my God, it's so much cheaper this way. And we can see so many more people. Why would we do it anyway, any other way? So that has just meant that it's a lot harder to be an actor now than it was. And look, it was hard before. Let's be real. Like it's always been a difficult career, but it's been a lot harder and it's been a lot more time consuming. And so I have to just have a lot more jobs than I used to have. I think I'm lucky that there were a good number of years in my career where I didn't really do anything other than acting. And so I had a lot of time to just follow baseball and do other things that I want to do. I'm also a writer. I spend a lot of time focusing on writing both screenplays and novels. And so, yeah, now I'm a little bit in a place in my life where it's hard to find the time for everything to the depth that I would like to, or even to the depth that I am perhaps accustomed to. So the upshot of this is I don't play in as many fantasy leagues as I used to.
Okay.
I do still play. I do still play fantasy. I do still obviously like watch the Phillies all the time. But there were certainly years where like I watched every single Philly start, even if I had to watch it later, I watched it. And now I can't always do that. It's just not realistic. So I'll always, you know, watch the condensed game, find out what happened, follow the Phillies. And I would say that I watch, I don't know, half of them.
Okay.
Maybe, you know, maybe slightly more than that, maybe like 3/5. So I'm still very much tuned into baseball news and everything like that. It's just, man, it's just harder to keep all the balls in the air is the truth of it.
100%. And I got to imagine too, the emerging AI world. I know that was a big part of the contract negotiations with the Actors Guild recently. I mean, that's a further level of complication for you, especially for like dealing, you know, do they use your likeness and image in the background and things and all that? That's got to make it even more complicated for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that is more of a concern for future job loss than a factor of current job loss.
Okay.
But I do think that it is a huge concern. And because of how hard the studios fought to get the provisions that they wanted on AI, like that was really the sticking point for why the strike went as long as it did, was because the studios really, really wanted to get their hands on AI capabilities. So even though I don't think we've seen a ton of actors losing jobs or like high profile jobs, I know, for example, something that I've done a lot of, it's totally not glamorous, are like corporate industrials, right? Like I'm good at being a suit person and like saying a lot of corporate gobbledygook. And those are already being done with AI.
Okay.
Granted, these are not, they're not high profile acting jobs. You don't make a ton of money to do them. And they're not incredibly artistically fulfilling. It was just like a paycheck for an actor that an actor's not getting anymore. So I guess that is one area where I know AI is already taking actors' jobs. Again, they're not the most they're not the jobs that everybody gets into this profession dreaming that they're going to do.
Right.
But I do think that it's the kind of thing that makes actors concerned about the future. And that was why actors were fighting so hard to try to get any protections at all in the contract. And I think a good number of actors, even those who ratified the agreement that we came to, were upset with the amount of AI protections that the union was just able to get from the studios. I do believe that this was the best deal that they could get. And right. That is concerning, frankly.
Of course.
It's also, there's a lot of other factors. I mean, and I'm not going to make this a 5-minute complaining corner, but like the rise of streaming has really disrupted the profitability model for so many different things that literally aren't the streaming giants. And since we've seen also in the pandemic, so many mergers,
right.
I think the public isn't seeing it yet, but less is being made than was being made pre-pandemic. And I think part of that is people are like, well, because of the strikes and stuff. No, there's actually not quite as many things even being made now as there were in the past. I think obviously we've seen this with films, but I think people are going to, perhaps things are going to turn around later in 2024. One can never tell, right? But I think people are going to notice that less is being made sort of on the television in addition to the film side. Perhaps the streaming giants are going to continue to make a lot of shows, but then they're the only ones making things, as opposed to there used to be this whole ecosystem of a lot of different kinds of things, lot of different kinds of productions. So I think actors are particularly concerned because we're already looking at how much harder it is for us to get a job and hold another job, right? And also the way that the industry has changed, and then also the fact that AI maybe isn't even stealing our jobs now, but is likely to steal more and more jobs for the future. It's a tough time. It's a tough time to be in the industry.
Living in Southern California, I kind of acutely aware of that. I may not know a ton of actors. I know a few, but it's also the surrounding industries, whether it's the camera, people who work cameras, or people that do hairstyling for the actors, or, you know, things of that nature, florists, you know, you read about that and you hear about that and like, there's just fewer events, and it's acutely aware of the lack of things being made right now. They're being made elsewhere too. That's the other thing too. That's making it even more difficult. But that aspect, I'm not so sure is, I don't know what the trend is there, but regardless, you know, I've seen those trends too. And it's definitely at different times right now.
It is. Really is. A lot of people in the industry are very doom and gloom, and mm-hmm. I'm trying to just kind of take it for what it is and hope that it gets better without necessarily having an expectation that it's going to get better. Right. Trying to kind of make the adjustment, right? Be like, all right, these are the pitches that I'm seeing now. So what's the adjustment that I'm going to make? And what's the adjustment that I'm going to make for my life to a certain degree, right?
Sure.
Because, again, not to be like a super Eeyore about it, but a lot of my friends and I are kind of like, well, we're glad that we got to live through the golden age of television, right? That we got to work in that time. And I'm glad that I got to do as much theater as I did. Well, theater was still even sort of remotely existing in the American landscape. Obviously, Broadway still exists and regional theaters are struggling along, but the pandemic and just people's habits of going to the theater have hit theaters really, really hard.
Absolutely.
Theater is never going to die. TV and film is never going to die. It's always going to be around. But as a question of how many people, and you're so right to bring up, it's not just actors. It's all of the people in the industry who make their living doing their jobs when actors are coming to a real set, right?
Yep.
So if you have AI actors, then all of a sudden that's a whole bunch of other people who are not coming to set who also don't have jobs, right? So just in terms of the expectation of how much are we actually going to get to do the thing that up until this point we had built our lives around being able to do, It's an open question, which is not to say that I'm going to quit being an actor, because I'm absolutely not, but I am adjusting my expectations about how much I can, how many opportunities I'm going to get in a year, and like how much of my money I'm probably going to make from it, just to be real. Sorry if I'm just getting real.
No, it's all good. Here. This is why we have different guests at different topics all the time. So I can learn, yeah. We can all learn. On a happy note, you just got an award. For the movie Herd, which is now going to go to Shudder. Can you tell everybody about that, please?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So this film is called Herd. It's spelled H-E-R-D, like herd of zombies or herd mentality. And this is how I describe it. It's a beautiful zombie movie. It's virus-based zombies. It's very much like The Last of Us. So if somebody watched The Last of Us, it's not exactly the same concept for the way that the virus spreads amongst people as the kind of mushroom-based analogy that they use in The Last of Us. But I feel like The Last of Us it's really a human story that is set against the backdrop of this particular virus-based zombie situation. And the focus in Herd is very much the human story and mm-hmm. what happens to people when society breaks down. And so I think that it's a really wonderful film for people who like zombie movies. I think it has some twists on the genre, but also if you're like, oh, I don't know if I like scary movies, it's actually a little bit more of sort of like a drama featuring zombies than it is like a horror movie, which I say to prepare people's expectations in both regards. I know that it doesn't have a high rating on IMDb, and that's mostly because I think a lot of people who were huge genre fans were like, you know, not enough zombies, one star, essentially. So I say that to prepare people's expectations, whether or not they want to watch a zombie movie. But yeah. I think that it is a beautiful film. And I was, yes, very honored to be named as the third best performance in a horror movie last year. All and right. yeah, what was particularly exciting for me was that number four on that list was my all-time lifelong hero, Kenneth Branagh. I came in above Kenneth Branagh.
Wow.
I mean, in horror movies for 1 year. But yeah, I was like, this is one of the best things that's ever happened to me in my life.
That's amazing.
So yeah. So Herd is now going to be on Shudder if folks have a Shudder subscription. And that will be starting in May. And I believe that it will be exclusively on Shudder for at least 6 months. So if you do not have a Shudder subscription and you want to watch Herd, you can also get it on DVD, but it's available currently on Apple TV and Amazon. So you can sneak in under the wire and get it there now.
Fantastic. I like to hear that. What's the favorite, your experience that you've enjoyed the most in acting? Is there a particular genre? Is there a particular project itself that you thought, or one that you're proudest of? Is there one that just stands like, yes, this is what I came in to do acting?
Honestly, I will try to pick some other things, but I really felt that way about Herd.
Okay, good.
It was so fun to play a queer action hero. Like, if I could play a queer action hero in every single thing that I did from here on out, I would be so thrilled. It was just fun. And I think it's also because I was the lead of that film, it's a very fulfilling experience as an actor for everything that happens in the film sort of to exist for the purpose of your character's growth, as opposed to being the function in somebody else's growth, which isn't to say that I don't deeply enjoy playing supporting characters. I feel like in a number of horror movies, I've been the person, the sort of like sidekick friend who's like, I don't know if that's a good idea, dude. Right. Like that's been my type in a couple of horror movies. So look, I'm very happy to do that as well. I think another project that really just like leaps to my heart was Homeland. I just loved working on that show so much. I loved my character, Janet Bain. I'm recurring in season 7 of that show. And, yeah. And she's a kind of low key bad guy, which was so fun. I will say, having also played a bad guy in a horror movie, it's a lot more fun to be a bad guy, and it's a lot easier. You're like, oh man, yeah, the good guys are always going through it and the bad guys are just showing up and being like, hey, so yeah, sorry, you're screwed. So Janet is not that kind of a bad guy, but just such a sort of cool, calm, collected, sarcastic, hilarious human being.
Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say it was a really warm set, right? Like I've worked on a lot of sets that have been really friendly, but I felt like that one was particularly welcoming, and I got to work with Dylan Baker, who's just he was the senator character that Janet was chief of staff to, and he's always been one of my favorite actors. So just getting to have almost all of my scenes be with him was incredible.
Yeah. So that was the season after they came back from Germany. Yes. Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
All right. Very cool.
It's the two seasons. So season six was the season after they came back from Germany. Season seven was the next season.
Okay.
So season six and seven were the sort of like domestic politics drama seasons.
Right. Yes.
So I was in the second of those two seasons.
Okay. Very cool. That's awesome. Yeah. The last season then. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That was.
I think it went 8 seasons.
Did it go 8? I'm so sorry.
I wasn't in season 8, but like I'm almost confident. I'm 93% sure.
You are correct. I just looked it up. My memory is failing every day. A little bit more every day, but nonetheless, it's all good. So very cool. You also been on MLB Network as well, on Off Base as well. That's a show that I think has been trying to draw in new audiences. I think they've been doing a very good job of that. It seems like a super fun set.
Oh, it's so fun. It's really fun. Yeah. I got to go on more in 2022 than 2023 just because of some kind of like restructuring of shows and stuff that they needed to do. Thanks, Bally Sports Network. Anyway.
Yeah.
Every time I go on, I always have the most fun. And I enjoy, like, is there a way that I can get a stat into this conversation, no matter what it is? That's the game that I play with myself when I go on Off Base. I mean, I think it's an incredibly fun show, and everybody that they have on there is always so great, and it's always like fun and unexpected conversations. But yeah, the particular game that I play is like, all right, we're talking about people's outfits. How can I get a stat into this?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. That's good stuff. How can people find your podcast, Take Me Into the Ballgame? When are you on? Where do they find it?
So we are on the PitcherList baseball feed. We are every Sunday right now. That has been our schedule, is that we upload a new podcast every Sunday. And we also have our own feed. Something to know that might confuse people if you search for Take Me Into the Ballgame is that you might find our old feed. And basically what happened was we wanted to move over to PitcherList moving forward. And the old place that we were, in retaliation, deleted our RSS feed and then wouldn't reply to any of my emails. No. So that is why our old feed and our new feed like will never be connected and cannot be connected. So a way, if you are Googling Take Me Into the Ballgame, by the way, in and to are separate words. If you are looking for that, or if you are putting that into your browser, you want to look for the graphic that is Philly's throwback colors.
Okay.
Thank you, Justin Paradise. It is pale, that sort of like powder blue and maroon. That is the new feed. If you see a sort of full color photograph, that is the old feed. Don't listen to that one, please.
All right. Very good. Very good.
So sorry for that very long explanation.
All good. All good. Ellen, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. We are in the bottom of the ninth. You can go catch the last out of this game, or Phillies Reds.
We both can.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much for joining me. It's a super pleasure having an hour with you here.
Oh my goodness. Thank you. And thank you. I'm always too long on every single podcast that I go on. And I know that I am the common denominator there. So thank you for letting me blather about a lot of things that were not remotely relevant or maybe even interesting.
They were interesting, entertaining, and that's why we do this. So awesome. And hey, saw you at Tout last year. Hopefully we'll see you again next year.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll be there. Look, I live in New York, so.
Very good. All right, that's going to wrap up today's pod. Big thanks to Ellen and Dare for joining us. Thank you to Prize Picks and to Vivid Seats for joining us. Thank you for joining us in the stream. We got 2-star stars with Todd Zoll and Clay Link tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.